Good morning, church. It is good to be with you this morning. I mean that sincerely. I am glad to be with y'all this morning. It has been a long week. I'm nearing the end of the semester, and it's always a busy time. So it's good to be done with most of that and just to be with y'all this morning. I particularly enjoyed the breakfast this morning. I don't know who all made everything, but the people who made those donuts did an excellent job. The last name's Palace. I don't know if you're visiting with us today, but I appreciate your work. You do good work. We need to start reminding everybody about that. Is a great thing, the Sunday morning breakfast, the first Sunday of the month. I know it's tough. I forgot this morning until the elders didn't walk in to meet at 8 o'clock. So I need to get a handle on when that's coming around and send out reminders, because it's a great time to fellowship. Parents, you don't have to fix anything special for your kids. The breakfast, if you just want to bring some Nutri-Grain bars and set them out, that'll be fine. Nobody's really particular. Grab some juice or coffee and just sit around and share in fellowship. It's a good thing to do. Now, remember, coming up on Christmas Eve, December 24th, that's going to be a Sunday. And rather than having Bible classes, we're going to have a special breakfast that morning at 9 o'clock in the cafeteria. That you are all invited to, and there's no specifications other than bring your best Christmas breakfast dish. All right. I like that. So let me start this morning with a really basic question. Who are you? I mean, that's what we're all kind of driving at. Who are you? Oh, well, I just cut that slide out in my haste this morning, so it says who, it's subtext, it's you subliminally put up there. Who are you? It's a basic question, but that's a hard answer sometimes to give, depending on who you're meeting is how you answer that, right? I remember a few years ago my kids had to do this, and maybe you had to, or your kids had to do this too, had to do a bio poem. You know what a bio poem is? It's where you write a poem about yourself, and you start with the line, I am the person who. Anybody ever done that before? Okay, just us. That's great. Well, I promise, it's a deal. All right? It's a real thing. And the poem goes, you know, I am the person who, you know, has a sister. I remember my son talked something about having a sister, or I'm the person who likes to, or I'm the person who lives, you know, in this situation, or I'm the person who does all of these different things. I am the person through. And we all have these truths about ourselves, right? If we were going around and everyone were to sort of fill out this form poem saying, I am the person who, we'd get a whole host of things. Some of them would be really funny. I mean, some things about ourselves is kind of humorous. Some things are painful because of the experiences we've had, the circumstances under which we have lived. Some of them are particularly painful, but all of those things about us are deeply embedded in our identity. Like, it is who we are. It is how we understand ourselves, right? And this is true for us individually. Like, this is how I understand myself, but it's also true for your family, for instance. Our family is the family who, or the family that, you know, this is the identity of our family. It's true for groups of people, like a congregation. We're the congregation who, several years ago, I worked with a congregation that was, I mean, it was just so clear from the very moment that I walked in the door and met them and eventually worked with them that they were the church who targeted teens and kids. And I remember the first Wednesday night, I realized that we were having more people on Wednesday night than Sunday mornings, and the kids outnumbered the adults about 3-1 on Wednesday nights. It was just the kid congregation. Here, we might say, well, Forest Mill is a church that is very young family friendly. I noticed that this morning that we have some especially loud praisers this morning, praising God, and that speaking in a language I do not understand. And I am thankful for those little guys. I am so thankful for that. It's a sign of life. So, right, we might understand ourselves as that congregation. Man, it's true for companies. It is true for industries. It is true for cities. It is even true of nations, right? We are the nation that has done this or is doing that. This is our identity. We're the pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and or we're the leading capitalist. You know, we're just however you can make a buck. You know, whatever you understand yourself as, it can work for a group identity as well. But can those stories, and this is a difficult question, can those stories, those truths, the way we understand ourselves, can those ever be changed? Now, that's a hard question. Because suppose you think of yourself in one particular way that's not healthy, right? I am the person who will never be a good mom or dad. I'm the person that always makes the wrong financial decision. I am the person who finds a way to always mess things up at work. Suppose you have an understanding like that of ourselves. And we probably all, by the way, have some sort of flawed image somewhere in our I am the person who statements. Every one of us. Can those things ever be changed? Now, psychologists tell us that they can actually be changed sometimes, but that it is extremely difficult. And those who study this it's really a science of how we understand ourselves, tell us that it is really difficult to change those deeply embedded truths, but that it is possible. Now, this morning, we don't get to do this very often. In fact, in December, because we're not doing small groups, we're not going to have the same opportunity to share. I want to do something really quick, and I didn't plan for this, but you saw we had an extra greeter this morning kind of come across, and I thought he was going to sit with us, but he really just wanted to give my wife a hug. It was so sweet. So sweet. So this morning, we're going to do something really quickly. I want you to think of an I am the person who. Now, probably it's not going to be terribly deep at this stage of the game, right? You're probably not going to say something that's too revealing or too vulnerable. But I want you to think of some I am the person who statement. And I want us to seek someone out just to show them a little bit of love. And I want you to share with them, I am the person who, and receive their I am the person who. You got that? So I'll give you a demonstration too. For an instance this morning. My name is Dustin Welch. I am the kid who was always the fat kid. Right? That's the way I've always seen myself, and that's the way I start kind of continue to see myself. And I've struggled with that. So that's who I am. If you say who's the fat kid in that room, I'll tell you it's me, right? So find somebody. You don't have to say you're the fat kid, but you can find some statement about yourself that you can share with somebody. Okay, ready to stand up? And you don't have to hug like Liam, but if you want to, that's fine. Stand up and find somebody to share your I am the person who statement. been bought with blood. I am mine no more. Now, I saw some of you were kind of animatedly sharing your I am the person who statements, and that is just great. When we come to the book of Isaiah, we're going to skip forward a few chapters now. We're kind of moving on towards the end of the book. And in Isaiah, God has labored over the preceding few chapters to wake his children up to their true identity, about who they really are. Now, to understand this, we've got to go back just a little bit. For a long time, they viewed themselves as the sort of impervious children of God, that they could do no wrong, and that God was always going to be their God and always going to take care of them, and they sort of couldn't mess that up, that they had the promise of the land, they had the promise of protection, they had the promise of blessing. And so that's the way they saw themselves, that everything was going to be all right. And for them, Yahweh God had become something like a good luck charm. As long as I got this, I'm good. But then, wake up to reality. God changed their identity. He said, that's no longer who you are. You are now covenant breakers. Right? And so the land was invaded. The people were taken off into captivity, carried off into exile. Jerusalem had been destroyed. The land had been overrun. And by chapter 51, which is where we're going to be this morning, that identity has become firmly entrenched in their minds. I am a covenant breaker. I am a covenant breaker. I am a covenant breaker. Because they are in Babylonian captivity, because Jerusalem has fallen, the temple has been destroyed, the nation of Israel exists no longer. If they had maps that marked nations in those days, it would not have existed. It would not have been on the map. There would have been no cities. There would have been no people. There would have been no government. There would have been no borders. None of that. Right? And if you were to ask these exiled Jews who were living in Babylonian captivity who they were, if you were to say, now I want you to give me an I am the person who statement for your people, and they would probably say something like this, that we are the objects of God's wrath. We have messed things up so badly that God hates us. We are the ones who are living under perpetual punishment because we have done so wrong, right? That is their new identity. And that one has been drilled into their minds, into their conscience. Now, some of you this morning carry very similar identities around with you. All right, you may be thinking of yourselves. You may say, I am the child who was not that smart. I am the brother who never lived up to my potential. I am the daughter who was never good enough. These identities that we carry, these stories, they can define us, but they can also trap us in ways that are entirely counter to God's desire for us. Now, praise God, as we're going to see this morning, there is good news. And in Isaiah chapter 51, beginning at verse 17, then we'll skip on down to verses 21 through 22, we read, awake, awake. Rise up, Jerusalem, you who have drunk from the hand of the Lord the cup of his wrath. You who have drained to its dregs the goblet that makes people stagger. Therefore, hear this, you afflicted one, made drunk but not with wine. This is what your sovereign Lord says, your God who defends his people. See, I have taken out of your hand that cup that made you stagger. From that cup, the goblet of my wrath, you will never drink again. Now this passage begins with what's called a double imperative, right? An imperative is a statement telling someone to do something. So here we get the one, awake, awake. Or if you and I were to say it today, we'd probably say something more like, wake up, wake up. Some of you back there were like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But no, that's what God is saying already. Golly. No, God is saying, wake up. Wake up. Open your eyes to this new reality. Yes, You were the ones who drank, and here he compares it to a cup of wrath. And you're still holding the goblet, right? You take the drink, you finish it off, all the way down to the dregs, right? The very, very bottom. And you finished it off, but the cup is still in your hand. It's empty. My wrath is gone, but you're still holding on to the cup. And God says, wake up to the new reality. There is no more wrath. You are no longer the objects of my wrath. You are not under judgment anymore. You are not hated. Because of what you've gone through, you think you are. Because of the punishment that you've endured, you think this is who I am, but that's not true any longer. There is no more wrath. And that's a hard lesson to learn, isn't it? It's hard for us, even though you may have been Christian for years and years and years. You see yourself and you low all the bad stuff you've done and said and thought, things that you would be embarrassed to bring before, say, the congregation, or even to mention to someone in one of these conversations we just had. Things that would just be shameful. And so you see these things about yourself, and it's tough to think that God wouldn't hate you for that. And so somewhere deep inside us, sometimes we hang on to that identity. I am the person of whom God could never approve. I'm the person that does not deserve to be done with God's wrath. But God is trying to get his people to wake up to this new reality. And so he continues on. Again, we get the double imperative, awake. Awake, Zion, clothe yourself with strength, put on garments of splendor. Jerusalem, the holy city, how beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, who say to Zion, your God reigns. Listen, your watchmen lift up their voices. Together they shout for joy. When the Lord returns to Zion, they will see it with their own eyes. Burst into songs of joy together, you ruins of Jerusalem. For the Lord has comforted his people and has redeemed Jerusalem. Wake up, wake up. Once again, once you've grasped that you're no longer under judgment, once you've grasped that you're not hated, you now need to see the next step. You now need to see even more. Not only are you not hated, you are now holy. Not only am I not mad at you anymore, not only are you not under judgment, you are something beloved to me. And in a way, it's compared to the new Exodus. Remember in Exodus when God was delivering his people out of the land of Egypt, and there were the 10 plagues, and the final plague, you might remember the final plague, and it kind of brought about the Passover, when the angel of the Lord passed over the households, and those that did not have the blood of the lamb on their doorposts, their firstborn was killed. And obedience to the Lord was the way to sort of avert this punishment. And they thought of this as like God's wrath is being poured out over all of Egypt. But there were little pockets that managed to avoid it because they followed God. And what God is saying here is this Passover theme of wrath has been averted by you, and it's now going to fall on your enemies, on your foes, on those who are against you. For so long, you have suffered, like in Egyptian captivity. For so long, you have been the objects of God's wrath. But that's not true anymore. Now you are again living in covenant with me. And all of that wrath, all of that anger is going to go against your enemies, against your foes. It's this theme of creating, again, if you go back to the Exodus, the theme of creating holy people, how God delivered them out of Egyptian bondage and into the wilderness in order to craft for themselves there. At Mount Sinai, when he delivered the Ten Commandments, it wasn't just about giving them a list of 10 good things to do. It was about creating a people, about taking this this group of slaves who had never known the right worship of a God, who had never experienced a relationship with Yahweh, about taking them and creating for them himself a people whom he later chose to live among. And God says, even though the whole world is mine, you are going to be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. That's what he tells them in Exodus chapter 19. So God is telling these people now, these people who are living in Babylonian exile hundreds of years later, he says, not only are you out of Egypt, like you're out of captivity, I want you to know that you are in the promised land. Not just that you're out of captivity, not just that you're not hated, not just that you're not the objects of my wrath, I want you to know that you are in the promised land, that you are in covenant with me, that you are my children, that you are my beloved. And if that first lesson, believing that you are not hated, if that's not a tough one to grasp, and it is, this one feels impossible. First, it's hard to believe God could not hate us. But to believe that God could really love us, that's a big pill to swallow. How could God make us, or to make it personal, how could God make me, and I know who me is, how could God make me holy? How could God look at all of this and say, yep, I love that, right? Isaiah hasn't told us yet about how this is going to happen. But if it is true, this is not just the next stage in personal development. This is not just a personal transformation. This is earth-shattering news. If the God of creation, if the God who formed us into a people, could not only be done with his wrath for us, but that he could make us holy, take this group of people and make us holy, that is life-changing, world-changing, earth-shattering news. So come back into our question for this morning, which was who are you? And this morning, we face a lot bigger task, a lot larger and more important than answering that question like who you are or in your physical image. And I believe physical image is important. But we're facing an even bigger question than that. We have to come face to face with this reality. We have to wake up to the new truth that we are holy. That's why God tells his people in Isaiah 52, verse 11, he says, depart, depart. And you see that double imperative again there? Depart, depart, go out from there, touch no unclean thing, come out from it and be pure, you who carry the articles of the Lord's house. He's saying, come out of that spiritual slavery. Take off those shackles of sin that God has unlocked. Don't live like you are rejected by God because you aren't. Live like you are holy because you are. You don't think you're holy because you know all the bad stuff you've done. But I know. I'm the one who made you. I'm the one who transformed you. And even though you don't believe it right now, I know that you're holy. This morning, even as we struggle, and it doesn't matter how old you are, by the way, this is maybe particularly true for younger people, but it's been my experience, and it's been through conversation, I've discovered that this is something we sort of carry with us throughout life, always trying to figure out exactly who we are. But no matter where you may have crafted your identity, whom you may believe you are, God has got more in store for you. That wherever you are at this point, God can do something with. Yes, you've made errors, but they're not fatal errors. Yes, you may have strayed from the path, but it's not irrecoverable. Yes, You may have been the object of God's wrath at one point in time, but that's not true any longer. You are holy. And if we can pray for you this morning, we can lift you up, offer you strength, to give you the aid of a family who loves you and wants to care for you and walk with you on this path. We want to do that now. If there's anything we can do for you, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?